The Gates of Horn and Ivory, by Francis Rosenfeld. Chapter 2. The Healings of Epidaurus. It was almost midnight when the goddesses and their suite reached the temple, where they were welcomed in complete silence by the priests, who took them to the tholos and retreated respectfully, content with the privilege of watching the ceremony. Persephone parted the veil between worlds, allowing the denizens of her kingdom safe passage to the land of the living. Merry meet, Asclepius, she welcomed the famed doctor with a smile. I carry glad tidings from your husband, mistress, and all his love. I will be happy to return and reassure him you are well. What dreams you bring, my friend? Will the afflicted receive welcome news? I bring healing for some, and comfort for others, and news from the ones they have loved in this world. The portal between worlds is open and we await your command, my queen. With that, he bowed deeply and moved to her side, to control the flow of healing dreams to the patients, who were fast asleep, curled up on the stone floors of the temple. Who is coming forth to seek guidance? She uttered the first words of the ritual. It's Attalus, goddess, son of Cassander. And what is your need? The sleeping soul gave her the full measure of his ailments, while Asclepius listened keenly, occasionally nodding. When the patient was done talking, the doctor thought deeply, then scribbled a recipe for medicine in light, on a parchment made of air, and handed it to the sleeping soul, to remember upon awakening. The soul then thanked the gods and departed, to leave room for the next in line. Sometime the afflicted would get a prescription for curative medicine, sometimes solace and comfort from the ones awaiting him or her on the other side, sometimes simply wisdom and insight into the cause of his troubles, and sometimes, rarely, would be touched by Asclepius himself. Those were the miraculous cures Epidaurus was so famous for, all over the civilized world. Upon awakening, the patient found him or herself cured, as if the illness never existed at all. The process continued, monotonous, into the early hours of the morning, until the last patient received counsel and the light of Eos started tinging the horizon. Persephone bid farewell to her friend and closed the veil behind him. Demeter didn't want to show it, but she was proud of her daughter, who handled ritual with the assurance and competence of an old hand, so the latter kept to herself the fact that while healing dreams were coming through as needed, many random artifacts of the Land of Dreams accompanied them as well, all sorts of figments passing through both gates, completely indifferent to the material they were made of. Some people will have very interesting stories to tell tomorrow, she smiled, amused. Most of them of very little practical value. Well, now that we've finished our work, I'm looking forward to the performances. This amphitheater has very good acoustics. We could all use a little levity. I'm sure they prepared games and celebrations. There won't be any more blood sacrifices, I hope, Persephone preempted. Why, of course, there will be sacrifices. What's more important than health? Mother, oh, get over it, Persephone. Don't worry, you get used to it. What could possibly be the benefit of killing something? Do you want a blood sacrifice? We eat ambrosia. You wouldn't dare offend the people and refuse their offerings, Persephone, or, so help me, I'll disown you. Anyway, you'll be happy to learn most upcoming rituals bear the theme of fertility, not atonement. Great, Persephone thought. We're moving from the bloody carnage straight into the drunken debauchery. That should be an improvement. Were you planning to join the priestesses of Hestia, daughter? Her mother mocked her. I keep hearing otherwise. One can't win in this game, one can't change anything, one just goes through the motions to keep the peace. You're the goddess of fertility, act like it. Have you spoken to Dionysus? Not yet, but I'm sure there's nothing about this year's Dionysia that needs special attention. Perish the thought. There is the issue of picking what tragedy will be performed. You need to bless the prize goats. There's the wine tasting, the sacrificial offerings. Again, just stop asking. If there is a celebration, assume someone will offer a blood sacrifice. By the gods, I miss Hades. How many days until the end of fall, I wonder? Rejoice, daughter. The world springs anew, from death to life, reborn. The hills of Epidaurus were bursting with bloom, draped in white, yellow, and purple carpets of wild flowers, and the air was heavy with the scent of tree blossoms. Bright red poppies dotted the wild meadows, basking in the crude light of the spring, and everything in nature was given to abandon and excess. Baskets full of eggs, grains, and flowers adorned the stairs of Demeter's temples, offerings for the multiplication of the crops, and the blessing of the animals, and all the cakes and wines were sweetened with honey, to curry the goddess's favor. The people were giddy with relief at the end of winter, almost irrationally so, one could see it in their eyes, which had acquired a glassy quality, as if under the influence of mind-altering substances, and Persephone suspected many of them actually did indulge. There was something wild and savage about this exuberance of renewal, a primal drive that would have been completely out of place in the underworld, even in the abundant bliss of the Elysian fields. Because for the living, being alive is an instinct, cruel and savage, driven to win at any cost, and that is true for all the dwellers of the earth, even for those who belong to the plant world. The rest is a merciful lie. Every emotion was heightened on earth. Love, hate, hope and despair ran the fates of the living, trampling over the teachings of the Stoics with the energy, chaos and carelessness of wild horses. Nothing could stand in their way, especially not wisdom, especially not at this time of year, when every pleasure in creation was there for the taking, with no concern for consequences. "Good grief, daughter, you're such a killjoy," Demeter commented, exasperated. Persephone looked at the crowd, knowing she would see all of these people soon enough, that they will all be surprised to find themselves waiting for Charon's boat, that they will all have regrets and suffer for the lives they left behind. She knew they would all drink from the Lethe and go back to start a new life, which would be just like the one before, with slightly changed details, and that this wheel of life and death will continue forever, or at least for as long as the stars shone in the sky. That was the gods' most fiercely guarded secret, that humans were just as immortal as they were, but got to enjoy their never-ending existence in disjointed pieces, like mixed-up puzzles put together wrong. She often wondered why the Moiri wasted their time crafting human fates, when everything, be it happiness or misery, always amounted to nothing, but she suspected it was because the gods wanted to make sure the humans were too busy to make trouble. She felt like the keeper of a halfway house sometimes, seeing people come, go, and come back again, with no memory of having been there before. Some wandered aimlessly for centuries around the riverbanks and through the asphodel meadows or through the fields of mourning, but all of them eventually came to terms with their fate, drank from the Lethe and went back to life. She occasionally grew fond of one human or another, and missed them when they left, even if she knew they would always come back, because they returned changed and oblivious to their history. The lucky, those who successfully underwent trials and tribulations and managed to lead a moral life three times in a row, were granted the privilege to stay and enjoy perpetual happiness in the Isles of the Blessed, but those were few and far between, and she didn't want to dwell on the lifers who had earned themselves a permanent place in Tartarus. In many ways, Hades was like a popular tourist destination. Everyone ended up there eventually, but very few called it their home. For some strange reason, a few short decades on Earth always outweighed the centuries they spent in the underworld, and no one appreciated the privilege of being allowed to rest and being spared their burdens. They were addicted to the game of chance that was life, and wanted to go back to it, in the hope of better luck next time, despite the fact life was a game even the winners always lost. As far as she could tell, people's lives on Earth were just as fleeting, insubstantial and illogical as the phantasms that got born from nothing and disappeared into nothing in the land of dreams. And yet, as she was looking at the crowd right now, she couldn't see one person there who truly believed they were ever going to die, while they entertained themselves by mourning the imaginary suffering depicted in a classic tragedy. The performance started, an exquisite rendering of the play Iphigenia, which could have brought a stone to tears. A group of wailers stood by to pick up on the emotions of the audience and delivered mournful accompaniment to the heartbreaking tragedy as the situation demanded. A mix of conflicting emotions overcame Persephone, from relief that they didn't perform human sacrifices anymore, to mystification at whatever Artemis must have been thinking to allow such a horror, to exasperation that even in the most sophisticated art form, performed with such mastery, she still couldn't escape the people's obsession with blood sacrifices. The heart-wrenching tragedy felt strange in the ebullience and lascivious excess of the spring celebrations, but humans were always up for experiencing misfortune vicariously, as if their own unavoidable suffering did not offer them sufficient emotional release.